Okay, so I am here with Krista Craven. It is May 17th. Hello, Krista.
Hello, Matthew.
Thank you for being a part of this. So to start off the interview, I'm just going to ask you, where are you from and how did you end up as a professor at the College of Worcester?
So I am one of those true global nomads. I was born in Virginia, but lived until I was 10 in Hawaii. My dad was in the Foreign Service, so I lived in Taiwan, Germany, Singapore, Austria, went to college in Florida, went to grad school in Washington, D.C., and then never ever thought I was going to end up in the Midwest, but came for an interview at the College of Worcester and was really pleasantly surprised and really excited about some of the work that was being done here. And, you know, my position is half women's gender and sexuality studies and half anthropology, and that was really compelling, and I was really excited to be able to being part of the development of this program that's been, you know, going on at that point for 30 years and now 40 years, but being part of that process was really an exciting aspect.
Awesome. So, what got you interested in the discipline of women's gender sexuality studies?
I'm one of those people, I've always had an unspoken minor in feminist studies. So all of my degrees are in anthropology. But even as an undergraduate, I went to a small liberal arts college called New College in Sarasota, Florida. And one of the things we were really encouraged to do was design tutorials. So it was, you know, very much self-designed kind of courses. And so we did it either for ourselves or in collaboration with other students. And so I had a lot of individual tutorials that I did, but also like a feminist theory course and a queer studies course that were co-designed with, you know, like 5 to 10 other students. And so that was a really exciting kind of collaborative learning moment for me. And that's something that I'm always trying to bring in to my experience here at Worcester as well, even though it's kind of a different culture. But I was really excited by the kinds of questions that were being asked in feminist studies and in queer studies. And so I was interested in the anthropological focus, you know, both the cross-cultural aspect of it, but also the focus on ethnography and, you know, working closely with groups and, you know, getting to know them over a long period of time and doing in-depth interviewing. You know, all of those things were really exciting to me, and I could really see them meshing with feminist, you know, and queer approaches to research as well.
Was there a particular, like, course you took or anything that really, like, was that moment where you were like, I really like the women's gender sexuality studies classes or discipline?
That is a great question. And actually, the first course that popped into my mind was a reproductive health course that I did with a feminist biologist. And even though that, you know, the natural sciences didn't end up being my trajectory, I have still incorporated that interest in reproductive health, you know, looking both at the you know, kind of the medical, you know, healthcare aspects of it, but also looking at the, you know, the social aspects and the political aspects of health. And so I think that really inspired me to, you know, to think about, to, you know, take a topic that I cared a lot about. I worked at a Planned Parenthood when I was an undergraduate as well. And to take a topic that I really cared a lot about, reproductive health, you know, pro-choice activism, and, you know, I did counseling for HIV testing. And to take all of those things and then look at them from, you know, through a feminist lens was just a really exciting opportunity that really got me interested in research as well as, you know, bringing that together with activism, because that's, you know, I wanted my research to be meaningful to, you know, to, you know, move beyond the academy in terms of, you know, in terms of moving out into the world.
A similar question is, how do you, you touched on this briefly, how do you combine both your anthropological background and your women's gender sexuality studies background to really shape how you teach courses at Worcester?
Mm-hmm. I have always really drawn on a lot of cross-cultural examples. I feel like it's really important, you know, both for myself but also for students to kind of move between analyzing a context in which we are well-versed, you know, something that, you know, is familiar, to things that are far less familiar, to be able to understand the experiences of people who grow up with very different cultural values and norms. And when we think about gender and sexuality, we have to be thinking about that throughout the world and the ways in which those, you know, norms around gender and sexuality also intersect with, you know, norms around race, class, you know, nationality, age, you know, I mean, all the axes of difference that are going to impact the ways that people experience gender and sexuality. So for me, that, you know, taking that cross-cultural focus, and then also, I mean, just going back to ethnography, taking a really in-depth look at people's lives. And so sometimes that's through ethnographic accounts, but then other times that's through literature or through memoir, where you really get a deep appreciation for a person's experience, and being able to understand kind of larger concepts, you know, feminist concepts, but through the lens of an individual experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think for the courses I've taken with you, I can definitely see that. So, what year did you become a professor at the College of Worcester?
In 2006.
2006,
so
okay.
So I'm going into my 12th year.
Wow. So my next question is a little bit about the change you've seen in the program since you first started at Worcester.
Absolutely.
So how did you see, or how was the program set up? Was it even called Women's Gender Sexuality Studies when you were here? And mm-hmm. also, how have you seen it change now, just specifically with the department as a whole?
Absolutely. So when I came in 2006, I was the first person to be hired in what was then women's studies. So even though it was only a half position, because I was also half in anthropology, I was the first kind of dedicated faculty. And that was something that, you know, professors had worked toward here for quite some time. And so it was a real honor to, you know, to come into that position. That was also a time where there was a lot of talk in the program about, you know, what kinds of things were going on in the discipline. Was women's studies, you know, an accurate description of the kind of work we were doing in the classroom? Because many of us were teaching on gender, on masculinity, and many of us were teaching about sexuality, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer studies. You know, all of these things were already in some ways being incorporated into the courses. And so just thinking about, you know, the naming of the program, but even more than that, we did a real curricular revision at that time. We looked at, you know, what courses were being offered, how can we reframe, or not really reframe, but how can we take what the program does well? Some of the things like senior seminar that's been done since 1978 when the program began, and that's the only non-graded course at the college, and really offers the students an opportunity to really engage deeply with feminist theory. You know, take things that were kind of hallmarks of the program, and then to kind of tweak that with some of the interests, you know, my interest in looking at transnational feminisms, again, as an anthropologist and thinking cross-culturally, I really wanted to think about, you know, incorporating more on what kinds of feminist work was going on throughout the world. And that was also the point at which we added a queer lives course, that there were no courses on the books that were offered in LGBTQ studies at the college. Actually, that's still the only course that's on the books. There are lots of courses that are offered, you know, one time, you know, or by a visitor, or, you know, just that are, you know, that are part of the student experience, but that aren't there aren't something that are offered regularly. But Queer Lives is offered once every 3 years, and I wish we could offer it more, yeah, because every time we offer it, I think the wait list is about as long as, you know, as the class itself. Mm-hmm. So it's a really exciting, you know, course to teach. And so at that point, I mean, to go back to your original question, so I think I arrived in 2006, and I think in 2006 and 2007, we were really talking through the curriculum. And then in 2008, we changed the name to Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies, but also made some real significant revisions in terms of the courses that were offered, and making it, you know, looking nationally and internationally at what kind of trends were going on in the field and making sure those were a big part of our program.
I think you definitely touched on this, but was there any struggle with trying to figure out how you changed it from being women's studies to women's gender sexuality studies? Was there like any, I guess, arguments between the people in charge about like what needed to be part of the curriculum? Mm-hmm. Like going from women's studies to women's gender sexuality studies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always been some fluidity of the curriculum in terms of, you know, just giving each instructor that teaches Intro to Wigs does it in a different way, you know, uses mm-hmm. different textbooks, covers different topics, but generally are covering some of the same ground in terms of, you know, giving a history of the discipline, you know, talking about, you know, social justice and intersectionality and those kinds of things. But when we revamped the curriculum, we were a little bit more intentional about kind of saying that these are the things that we want to see in these particular courses, and like, you know, moving through the curriculum, we want to make sure that students are exposed to all of these different perspectives. And there's also this wealth of cross-listed courses that we have. I mean, even though I'm I'm the you know, half of me is, you know, is teaching the Wigs courses. We have so many opportunities at the college to connect with, you know, feminist faculty and other disciplines that are teaching sometimes interdisciplinary, but sometimes, you know, feminist political science or feminist psychology or feminist sociology. And so being able to figure out, like, what are our core objectives in the Wigs courses, but then what can we also know that our students are going to be getting, you know, in some of these cross-listed courses. So there's really a lot of conversation about that. The other thing that your question made me think of, though, is that, you know, teaching an Introduction to Women's Studies course, I think many people already felt like, oh my gosh, there's no way I can possibly fit in everything I want to fit in, right? And so I think the big question was, well, if we're also going to talk about gender and sexuality in substantive ways, well, how on earth are we going to do this? And I think this is true really of any introductory course. There's no way to cover it all. And so we designed that course to really leave it flexible for the instructor to kind of play to some of their own strengths. But we really wanted to make sure that that course was, you know, substantively addressing, you know, intersections of experience. We, you know, we wanted to make sure that that course was thinking critically, you know, bringing in critical race theory, you know, bringing in transnational feminist perspectives, bringing in queer studies perspectives. And so being intentional about saying, okay, well, we want this course to do, you know, these are the broad things we want this course to do, but the particular topics that get taken up are really at the discretion of the professor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you were talking about the cross-listed courses, I remember when I talked to you about becoming a Wigs major, you were like, you are going to be taking so many different cross-listed courses. You're going to have so many extra ones. And I'm like, well, I really do now. So that just made me laugh, really.
That's great. Because I talk with a lot of students about that because, honestly, I mean, because we have such a rich array of cross-listed courses at the college, the vast majority of our majors and minors take way more than they need for their major and minor. I mean, in terms of like mm-hmm. having to take a certain amount, because they tend to be the kind of courses that you want to take anyway. You know, they're the kind of courses that often excite, you know, a student that is interested in feminist or queer studies is going to be drawn to courses on, you know, on topics about reproduction, about sexuality, and the kinds of things that, you know, that are being taught across the college.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So we talked about the sort of change within the program itself. My next question is, have you seen a change in the students at Worcester who are mm-hmm. in the Wigs department, or just changes in students in general with their perception of people in the Wigs department or faculty in the Wigs department?
So when I first came to the college, you may remember this from your very, very first year at the college. So during orientation, they have the, I'm going to forget what they're called, but like the kind of mini classes, like where you go around to the different departmental meetings and
yeah.
learn mm-hmm. about different majors.
Yeah.
I know there's an official name for that.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting. But when I first came here, we used to get, you know, maybe three or four students that were interested in women's studies and then women's gender and sexuality studies. And that was always exciting. And we talked to them about our courses. And we'd, you know, very often those were some of the students that would get into intro and be a part of that. Now when we do it, we have three sessions of that. I mean, easily we get 50 or 60 students over the course of it. There is a tremendous difference, even over the last decade, of students that come into college saying, I want to learn about these perspectives. You know, I want to learn about women's gender and sexuality studies. There's also a difference in terms of students coming in who are out and confident and comfortable in themselves. In the, you know, I would say in the last 5 years, so many more students in those early orientation, you know, meetings would say, oh yeah, I'm a part of my Gay Straight Alliance at my high school, and I want to continue that work now that I'm at college. And so having students that are already thinking about these issues, not coming into class for, you know, the very first time going, you know, like, what does all this mean? You know, but coming in with some of their own ideas. And I think, you know, in this particular political moment, too, I think we see, whereas 10 years ago, I felt like I was often, especially in the intro classes, trying to explain to students why we're not in a post-feminist, post-racial moment, why we're, you know, why this stuff is still necessary, yeah. right? And now I feel like students are coming to us saying, okay, we realize shit is bad, you know, out there in the world, and we see, you know, in the news, you know, on the television, and, you know, we know that feminists have been working with this for many years, and we want to learn more about how to make change in the world and how to think about equity in, you know, in important ways and start to do this work. And so I feel like students are kind of, instead of us trying to convince students that this is important, they're you know, we want to work and figure this out together.
Yeah. That's really interesting because one of the reasons what drove me to WIGS a lot was at first I was, when I came to Worcester, I was like, I'll take the intro class for fun. I don't think it'll really be like all that like interesting. It feels like everyone like knows this already. But like through it, I realized that it's not just the study of sexuality. It's very interesting that you were saying that because I definitely, that was a reason why I chose to be in the WIGS department. Yeah.
Well, and one of the things we talked about, even with the name change, you know, one of the proposals on the table was to call the program Feminist Studies because really, I think most of us that teach in WIGS, you know, what became called Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies, feel like feminism is a perspective with which we view subjects in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about, you know, studying women or yeah. studying masculinity or studying queer experience. It's about looking really at anything in the world and taking a perspective that really values equity and values, you know, values social justice and... It, you know, it's not so much about the topic, it's more about the perspective and the questions that you ask. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I mean, I think the way that, you know, we like to approach most of the classes.
My next question is about the strengths and weaknesses you see in the department. So sort of like, what frustrations have you experienced being in the department, whether that be with the faculty as a whole on campus? That one, what do you really see as like the big strength of the department?
I think the biggest difficulty that we experience is just being such a small department and having, you know, we've had visitors for at least 5 or 6 years, which means that on some level, you know, we're getting new and exciting ideas every year with all of the different people that are coming through the program, but there's a lack of stability. And there's a sense, you know, I think students particularly, you know, you take this amazing course with somebody in your, you know, second year, and then you want to do your IS on that topic, but that person's not here anymore. I would also love to see more of the queer lives, you know, work like queer lives. And like I said, that is such a popular course on campus. There's a tremendous amount of student demand, and we don't have the faculty to offer, you know, more courses. I mean, we could easily offer like an intro to LGBTQ studies and a queer theory course and, you know, courses, a variety of courses that, you know, there's been great student demand for a queer studies minor for many years. And I mean, I think that would be so amazing. I mean, if we had the faculty to do it, but one course every 3 years that's on the books does not a minor make. And so we really have to, we need the institutional support to have regular faculty who are, you know, here in the long term offering these courses over and over again so that we can make them available to students.
Do you think it's the institutional support because it's a lack of support, like in general for the curriculum of women's gender sexuality studies, or where do you think that comes from?
I think it comes from being a small institution and having a lot of different needs across campus and wanting to, you know, think about where student desires lie. You know, we've also seen, you know, our majors have quadrupled over the last decade. And so we've really seen a great deal of interest in WIGS. And that's one reason that we're hiring a tenure track position. And that's, you know, it is really exciting to have that support from the institution to do that.
You talked about the weaknesses a little bit of the department. What do you think a big strength of the department is?
Yes. Getting back to the other half of the question. As we have gotten more majors, we've gotten much more diverse interests in the department. And so we end up with IS projects that are all over the map, quite literally, and figuratively, in the sense that students are drawing from a lot of different disciplines. They are interested in a lot of different topics. And I think that the weakness there is that we don't have faculty that necessarily specialize in all of those things. You know, we had a great project a couple years ago on disability rights. We've had a project, a VR project, so virtual reality project, that a student, you know, a student designed a virtual reality video game to, you know, to teach people about the experience of sexual assault survivors. I mean, we've had such an array, and I give those two examples because neither of those are in my specialty areas.
Yeah.
I actually experienced VR for the very first time looking at her IS, which was awesome. But again, you know, I think the weakness is that we don't necessarily have the specialty areas, you know, in terms of faculty being able to support students, but we have faculty that are excited about trying out new and different things. And so we end up with students that say, okay, I'm willing to look into VR on my own. I'm willing to get that, you know, get that training, and then I'm going to run with this. And to then have faculty to be able to say, okay, I'm going to run with you, you know, and that's, to me, that's a strength of the program, is that we get, even though we're very small, and, you know, I mean, when we look at, like, you know, large university settings where they've got, you know, 10, 15 faculty in the department, and you have a really different kind of, you know, situation, here we have far fewer faculty, but I think we have very, you know, dedicated and interested and curious faculty who want to try out new things. And a lot of that comes from our cross-listing faculty, you know, people who are, you know, their home discipline is not necessarily WIGS, but they are willing to work with us around these very innovative, creative, interdisciplinary projects. And that, you know, some really cool stuff, I think, comes out of the program in that way.
I think this leads perfectly to my next question about how do you envision the future of the WIGS program at Worcester? Like, as it's getting bigger, do you envision, like, the program changing in any way?
I think there's always change, and there really should be. I think it's, you know, any program that doesn't change is just going to remain stagnant and remain, you know, in a particular historical moment where, you know, it's not going to be as relevant as you move forward. I think WIGS has grown so much since, you know, so many programs were established across the country in the 1970s and 80s. We were one of the earliest. And we have organizations like the National Women's Studies Association, you know, various like conferences devoted to sexuality studies and queer studies that are really pushing the boundaries of the field. And I think that's part of why, you know, hiring new faculty, both in WIGS and in other disciplines that do feminist and queer research, really helps us remain vital, because we get to continue to be a part of those conversations and, you know, go to those national and international conferences and bring that back to the program and say, okay, so, you know, in 2006, when I came, these were some of the important things that we wanted to make sure were covered in our courses. Well, what now? You know, how do we want to see those courses evolve? And so I feel like that is an ongoing conversation, even though, you know, right after I got here in 2008, we did this curricular revamp. You know, it's time to revamp again. And I think that part of the excitement for me of hiring a tenure track colleague is bringing someone in with new ideas of how to think about, you know, how to think about improving the program. You know, what are ways that we can see the program, you know, moving and contributing to campus and beyond in the future?
So my next question is, What are some of the favorite classes you have taught in the wigs department? And also, what is, if you could teach a course, any course, like what's your dream course to teach in a wigs department?
I get, one of the reasons that I was really drawn to Worcester was that I got a chance to teach so many of the courses that I wanted to teach. Two of the courses that I really wanted to design and teach were ones that we added in 2008, so Transnational Feminisms and Queer Lives. Both of those were, you know, areas of interest and specialty for me. And I absolutely, you know, love introducing students to those topics because they're topics that I care a great deal about. But I've also been able to offer courses that have cross-listed with WIGS through my anthropology side, like the Global Politics of Reproduction, which is also, you know, just in my specialty area, you know, along the lines of my own research. And being able to offer those kinds of courses has been really, you know, really exciting to me. I mean, there's nothing, I think, more exciting than introducing students to things that you love and that you care about. I've also, in the last couple of years, become very interested in public scholarship and thinking about ways to move the kinds of work that we do in the classroom and the kind of theoretical work that we do into practice and thinking about ways of making not only research public, but also the class that you were in with me, Global Politics of Reproduction. Mm-hmm. Our semester-long project was a Wikipedia project, and that, you know, all of the students contributed either a substantial revision or a new article to Wikipedia. And I think I mentioned this to you in the car the other day. Mm-hmm. What's really exciting about that is those have been viewed thousands. I mean, the articles that students in that class produced have been viewed like hundreds, you know, tens of thousands of times. And many times, like the one that you wrote on Sabata on on massage during pregnancy in Mexico, is if you type in Sabata on Google Scholar, or not Google Scholar, I'm sorry, like just regular Google search, is like the first thing that comes up. Yeah. I mean, that is true public scholarship. And so that's something that, you know, it's not a research paper that you turned into me at the end of the class and never really looked at again and never really picked up. But that's something that you have left a mark on a public space that has put more information out there on a practice that wasn't included before. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that was one of my personally favorite classes I've taken at Worcester. And that project was really cool.
The other thing that I loved about that project was so many of the students in the class really wanted to raise the volume of women of color in the field. Mm-hmm. And so either chose to, since it was an anthropology class, look at the work of women of color anthropologists, or chose to look at, you know, theorists or activists who were making a difference in terms of reproductive justice and reproductive health care, particularly in communities of people of color. And so that was a really, again, in terms of making, you know, putting information out there that wasn't previously there, being able to do that with a real political intention, you know, being able to say, okay, not only am I going to put, you know, I mean, we can all put whatever we want out onto the internet, but being able to make those choices with a political understanding of, you know, this is important because other people are not highlighting this work. Other people are not raising the volume of these voices. So let's do it. You know, let's contribute to, you know, this as a political, you know, contribution.
Yeah. And I think that project itself really like highlighted what I see the WIGS department wanting to get out of the students, which is like educating people on issues that are intersectional.
Absolutely. And acknowledging with that project that a lot of the time it was students in our class that started those articles, but they've now been edited by other people. So they've opened the door for other people to contribute. And so that really gives a sense, too, of collaborative scholarship.
I mean, all research is collaborative in the sense that you're always drawing on what came before. You're always drawing on the ideas that, you know, maybe it was, you know, over lunch or after class that you talk to someone, but you know, you're always generating that kind of collaborative work. But to be able to engage in a project like the Wikipedia project, where
you may write something down, but someone else may come in and change it, or they may add to it, or they may say, well, actually, this isn't right, and they make an argument for why that is. That kind of collaborative scholarship, I think, is really important to feminist thought. You know, when we go back to looking at, you know, feminist pedagogy and thinking about how, you know, how feminist research and scholarship is conducted, collaboration is a huge, huge part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of Wikipedia, can you talk a little bit about the WIGS edit-a-thon that happens at Worcester?
And, absolutely. Yeah. So for the last, I think, 4 years now, might be three, we can look it up, we have done a WIGS Wikipedia edit-a-thon every spring, and we've linked it to WIGS Week. So that's our, you know, kind of week in the spring where we usually bring in, you know, one headliner speaker. You know, we've had Jack Halberstam, we had Bree Newsom, we've had some really amazing people come. But there's always other things scheduled that week too. So like conversations on campus around reproductive rights, you know, around all kinds of topics that students have found important. And so there's often roundtables and things like that. So one of the things that we've had for the last few years is the edit-a-thon. And I think each year we've had about five classes, and most of those are classes that are cross-listed with WIGS or that have a significant component of feminist or queer studies, you know, kind of work in the class. And those courses have all contributed to Wikipedia articles. And so the courses, you know, are all run independently, and the students are doing that work in each of those courses. But ultimately, during WIGS week, we come together to kind of, a lot of us upload the material at that time, or, you know, and or engage in conversation just about the process of doing it. Some of the students, when we got together last year, many of them had already uploaded their material to Wikipedia, and so they were actually able to talk with the group about their experience then with moderators who either, you know, continue to contribute to their work or who blocked their work for particular reasons. And so we were able to get into some really interesting conversations about what it looks like to put feminist material out there and, you know, have it accepted or not, and, you know, what kinds of strategies, you know, we could have together to make sure that material gets out there. I think there's been some really great conversations kind of between and among the students in the classes, because they're all working on different topics, but they're also working towards this larger goal of, you know, kind of upping the voices of women on Wikipedia. And we know, I mean, the National Women's Studies Association has partnered with WikiEDU for at least 5 or 6 years, because we know that the contributions on Wikipedia are primarily, you know, are primarily done by white male writers. And so what does it mean to think about drawing in, you know, students of color, non-binary students, female students, to say, you know, we can be Wikipedians too. We can, you know, contribute to these articles as well. And we can contribute on topics that might not otherwise be represented on Wikipedia. I think, if I remember correctly, it's like less than 20% of the biographies on Wikipedia are about women. Mm. And that tells you something really substantial about who's contributing and whose work is seen as important, right? And then if we, I mean, again, I don't know the statistics, but if we think about, well, how does that intersect with, you know, LGBTQ organizers or theorists? How does that intersect with, you know, with women of color or people of color? Again, these are, you know, these are important things to be thinking about as we think about our scholarship, is raising the volume of historically marginalized voices.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the most surprising things when we were doing our Wikipedia project was that, like, none of the feminists or authors we were reading were put on Wikipedia yet. Or, yeah. Or like, if they had, it was like, this is so-and-so born here. And that was right, all that was on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Absolutely. I mean, I think that was really eye-opening for students. And then oh my gosh, I've forgotten her name, but the one woman in our class who looked at postpartum depression. And it was, there was a huge section on men's experience with postpartum depression, but nothing on the symptoms that a woman might experience with postpartum depression.
Yeah, that was...
And that's profound. That tells you something about who's writing yes. and who's contributing to these articles, right?
Yes. Yeah, no, I remember, I think I edited that one, and I was just shocked about it. And I think she was saying, too, how she kept uploading new things and the original author kept taking them down.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah. so interesting.
I mean, there's lots of politics to thinking about, you know, contributing to public feminist scholarship.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about how you envision the department moving forward, but I want to ask a little bit about, we talked about the Wikipedia edit-a-thon, but what are some other important things you see the department doing throughout the year, not in the classroom, but like outside of the classroom, like its impact on the campus?
One of the things that I love about our department is the senior seminar, Feminist Pedagogy in Practice, which I talked a little bit about before. It's the only non-graded course at the college, so all of the students, you know, it's pass-fail. It's the idea is to, you know, kind of mirror and think through feminist pedagogy, even in the sense that people aren't being graded on their performance, that it is a much more collaborative, you know, kind of endeavor, that students are working together, but also designing their own assignments and their own ideas about the way that they want to see the course proceed. In a class like that, students are asked to think about feminist pedagogy. So think about feminist teaching and learning, you know, thinking about themselves as learners, but then also how they might draw in others and teach them, not necessarily in a classroom environment, but how they might be involved in, you know, helping people better understand feminist issues. And so in that class, you know, when I teach it, I always ask students, you know, to think for their final project about what kind of mark that they want to leave on campus. And so the all-gender bathrooms project emerged from that class, and it wasn't completed during that class. But what I love about it was that it began there. The students there had an idea. They wanted to see something happen on campus, and they got together the tools to work with that and then moved forward with it. And it's something that now all the single-stall bathrooms on campus are all-gender bathrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, students worked towards a meatless Monday on campus and really linking the you know, vegetarianism and feminist, you know, feminist ethics and really kind of coming up with a sophisticated feminist theoretical argument for why they wanted to do what they did. What I really love is that in that class, something different always comes out of it. And that's, those are the kinds of contributions that I want to see WIGS making on campus, is through, you know, student-driven projects, things that the students find important and, you know, and that I can support and get behind and work with them on, you know, how to best organize it, but that it's something that's really driven by their ideas and their passions.
Mm-hmm. So as a professor for that kind of student-driven class, how does that differ from teaching, like, a different course? Like,
Well, it's so different in the sense that I come into that class kind of with the bones of a syllabus. Like, I have some of the first readings that we're going to do, you know, just to kind of get us started. I want to introduce the students to, you know, feminist pedagogy. So we begin by reading Bell Hooks' Teaching to Transgress, which is a real classic in thinking about feminist teaching and learning. And we read other, you know, more recent work like Sarah Ahmed. And we read a variety of different things that get us thinking about what can feminist pedagogy bring to not only our personal sense of learning, but how we want to move through the world, how we want to live our lives, especially since the students in that class are seniors. You know, how do we want to live our lives beyond the, you know, beyond academia, beyond college? And so on the first day of that class, I also bring in a list of questions for students about what kinds of assignments they want to see in the class. How do they want to learn about the material? You know, how do we want to, in an ungraded class or not, or a pass-fail class, how do we want to hold ourselves accountable for doing the research or doing the reading and coming to class, you know, to engage? I mean, obviously, if we, you know, if everybody just blows off the class, then we don't actually have that kind of collaborative engagement. So how do we, you know, as a group, decide, you know, what that's going to look like. And the students ultimately do that. They really design the syllabus. And that's a really exciting part of it. And that's different. You know, most classes I teach, I'm the one that designs the syllabus. You know, mm-hmm. I come up with the assignments. No, there's some, I actually try a version of that in when I teach intro to WIGS. I also have the students design one assignment. I don't have them design the whole course, but I do have them design one assignment. And so it's kind of the mini version of, like, you know, if you take intro and then when you get to be a senior, you kind of get the you know, broader, more experienced version, because I assume that seniors are going to be a little bit more experienced with, you know, how they learn,
And what kind of, what kind of possibilities exist for thinking about, learning in different kinds of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to take that class next semester.
I'm glad you're.
Yes. So I guess another question I have is, as a teacher, you see yourself teaching your students to go out into the world and have specific things you want them to learn through the classes that we talked about earlier. But is there ever anything you hope to learn from the students?
That's a great question. And I think it's some of what I love about, about teaching senior seminar, because the students are always, they're always coming up with topics that are not in my specialty area. Mm-hmm. Like, studying feminist ethical arguments for vegetarianism, totally outside my wheelhouse, mm-hmm. but really important and fascinating, and something that I learned a lot from that experience. Another course, this was years ago, but the seminar got really interested in embodied learning, about thinking about how we learn not only through reading and talking about things, but how we learn through moving our bodies. Mm-hmm. And so that class, we went and took a yoga class together and engaged in some really amazing conversation about, physical and mental health and how that relates to thinking about feminist learning. Again, not at all in my area of expertise, but something that I feel like still impacts the ways that I think about kind of bringing more, kinesthetic or embodied practice into classrooms. And so I feel like the students are always in some ways planting seeds for me to then think about, okay, so how can I incorporate something like this into, maybe back into the intro class, maybe really coming full circle in a sense, or how are these things that I can incorporate into other aspects of my teaching or the ways that I advise IS, and, encouraging students. I think I learned from the creativity of students to then kind of coming, full circle again, to then encourage creativity on the part of future students to mm-hmm. be able to say, these are some of the things that have been done in the past, but that's not all we can do. So what ideas do you have? What virtual reality, again, something that I'm not well versed in, what kind of creative ways can you come to this material and, make something new that impacts the world in some really different ways?
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a moment where you've been teaching a class where a student says something or asks a certain question or writes something in a paper where you go yes, they got it. They got what I want to teach them.
Absolutely. I mean, there are definitely those moments where, particularly when I see students engaging outside of their comfort zone and trying to understand situations and experiences that are different than their own, I think those are the most powerful moments for me. As someone who grew up all over the world, experiencing, different people in different cultures, also as an anthropologist, thinking about that training of, trying to understand how other people make sense of their world in different ways. And so I always feel that sense when I see a student able to kind of come out of their own personal experience. I mean, there's a lot that we can learn, a lot of feminist learning and teaching is very personal. I mean, you've got the second wave, the personal is political, and absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really agree that the personal really is political, and the political is personal. But I also think that what that, that reduction takes us out of the idea of understanding how other people's personal is political, if that makes sense. Like the idea that it's not only our own personal that's political, but it's also thinking about the experiences of people who, who may have very different backgrounds from our own, may understand things in very different ways than we do, and trying to understand the ways that they make sense of their experience in the world. And so that's particularly powerful for me when I see students grappling with that and doing that work.
So those are all the questions I have, but I'm going to, ask you, is there anything else you want to talk about in regards to Wigs at Worcester?
I would love to know what you want to see in the future of the program, particularly since you're engaging mm-hmm. in, this project of interviewing a lot of alums and me as a professor. I'd be interested in your ideas of
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I've always thought would be interesting is thinking about the core course requirements for Worcester in general. Like, we need a quantitative requirement. Mm-hmm. We need math and natural science. We need some humanities courses, like feminist course requirement or something like that.
FQ, yeah. A feminist and queer studies requirement.
Yeah. So I've always thought that that could be really interesting. Maybe something to bring up in feminist pedagogy, for instance.
You know, it's interesting to think about when you have a discipline that, you know, is very interdisciplinary and impacts thinking in a variety of you know, across a range of disciplines. How do you make that more effective? How do mm-hmm. how do you infuse that into more students' experience?
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up?
No, but thank you so much.
Yeah,
this
thank
was
you.
A really nice opportunity to talk about this.
Thank you for being a part of the project.
Excellent. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Matt.